Chapter 2. Imperial Fist's frigate, Unbreakable Truth, docked with the Phalanx, Terran orbit.
"He is weak and a coward," said Arcamus.
Before him, the pict feed from within the cell showed Dowager son Hieracro lying on the floor, curled into a fetal ball. Behind the screens, a speaker hissed with static and the sound of low weeping. The man they had taken from the mountaintop compound had done little but sob since he had gained full consciousness. They had returned to the Unbreakable Truth. The frigate was docked with the Phalanx in high orbit above Terra, like a pilot fish attached to a whale.
"Yes, he is both a coward and weak," said Andromeda, looking up at him from the screen. "Why does that worry you?"
Arcamus paused, blinking. He had not been aware that his voice had carried any of the doubts that rolled through his mind. The healing skin on his back itched beneath his black robe. The hand of his bionic arm squeezed shut with a hiss and then snapped open.
"Why would the Alpha Legion use such flawed tools? Why would they trust him with anything of value?"
"They may not have had a choice. Even the most elaborate and finely balanced plans must sometimes include weak links. The world outside the legions is not built uniformly."
"Even within the legions it is not," said Arcamus.
Andromeda raised an eyebrow, waiting for him to elaborate. He remained silent.
"They tried to kill him," said Andromeda at last. "That suggests that they both knew his weakness and needed to ensure his silence."
"Perhaps," said Arcamus.
Andromeda's mouth opened and then closed.
"You don't want to know what he knows?" she said,
and her voice was cold.
"Want?" he asked,
and could feel the edge in his voice. He looked at her and saw her flinch. He shook his head, feeling the muscle tense in his jaw.
"Just get it," he said.
On the screen, Hieracro twitched, and a moan came from the speaker.
"All of it."
He turned away and left the chamber. Armina Fell was waiting for Arcamus as he left the cell observation chamber. Two warriors from Sotaro's squad stood guard to either side of the door. They had orders to let no one enter, and to ensure that anyone who entered the detention complex was moved on without delay. But one did not question the Praetorian's personal astropath. That she had boarded the Unbreakable Truth from the Phalanx without asking permission was also unsurprising. There were few other beings under the light of Sol who touched as many secrets as the woman who stood in front of him, leaning on a black and silver staff.
"Lady,"
he said, and bowed his head.
"Master of Huskarls,"
she said, her voice cracking with age and fatigue. She turned her head towards him, the white mane of hair shifting as though rising on a breath of air that was not there.
"You requested audience with the Primarch. I am here to take you to him."
"Aboard the Phalanx."
She nodded and began to walk down the corridor, back bent forwards, staff tapping a slow rhythm on the deck. They climbed up through the frigate's decks and crossed the docking limb to the Phalanx. An hour of travel saw them pass through chambers hung with hundreds of victory banners and pass under the stone gaze of long-dead heroes. Arcamus knew them all. Many of them he had known in life. Some he had seen die. He had the sudden feeling that he was alone, a relic of an age that belonged to the dead, who were now stone.
"You are over a century older than me," said Armina.
It was the first thing she had said in hours, and it surprised him enough that he could only blink as she continued.
"When I was born, you were already a warrior, already a leader of armies. When you bore your legion's banner, I was a girl, playing in the dust of what was once the Achaemenid Empire. When the Emperor took my sight, I was still a girl, and you had served the Imperium for over a century. Yet here we are, the aged warrior and the crone."
"You are looking in my mind," he growled.
"Yes," she said, "the surface at least."
"Why?"
"If your eyes are open, they see the world around them," she said,
and sucked in a wheezing breath.
"Did your observation have a point?" he asked.
"Age is not time. It is the mark of service.
As you say, he replied.
They walked on in silence, their steps marked by the tap of Armina Fell's cane. Dawn waited for them in a small planning chamber close to the main strategium. Archimus noted that the Huskarls guarding the corridors and entrance to the chamber waited for the astropath to speak, rather than him, before admitting them.
I am not one of them, he realized,
and felt something cold pass over the burned skin of his back. It was as it should be, but it felt like something else, like a judgment. The Primarch did not look up as Archimus entered. Parchment and data slates lay on the circular table, arranged in neat islands. Dawn wore armor, but had stripped the gauntlets from his hands. A set of multi-legged calipers lay under the fingers of the right, a brass stylus in the left. When he spoke, it was to Armina Fell, rather than Archimus.
Phaeton?
He said, as though posing the next question in a discussion that Archimus's arrival had cut into. Armina Fell shook her head.
No word, though that could mean nothing.
Every silence means something.
Our communication with Phaeton has been facilitated by the relay station at Ashurla. If there has been a problem with the station...
Whether we have lost a forge world, or if the enemy have taken Ashurla station to blind us, it is becoming difficult not to presume the worst.
We will renew our efforts, Lord, said Fell,
then dipped her head and shuffled out of the chamber. Dawn turned his eyes back to the parchments beneath his stylus. Archimus waited, feeling the moments pass with the scratching of lines and figures.
How many did you lose?
Said Dawn at last, looking up at Archimus.
4,
said Archimus. He did not need to ask what his Primarch was referring to. The mission to the Hierakromance was hours old, but there was nothing in the actions of his legion that was beyond Dawn's sight.
3 brothers in the gunship that was lost, 1 on the ground. A heavy price for 1 man. It was a flawed mission in both planning and execution. 2 rushed and without contingency for wider possibilities. And the target of the raid?
Asked Dawn, his voice cold and emotionless, as his stylus continued its path across the parchment.
He's in chains on the unbreakable truth. He is being put to the question now. Has he given you answers?
Not yet, my lord, but...
Archimus felt the words drain out of his mouth. Dawn's stylus stopped in its movement over the parchment. The Primarch looked up.
Why are you here, then?
This task, lord, it is not... what we are. It is not the war we were made for, not the war we should be fighting.
Dawn put the stylus down and straightened.
Necessity, he said.
It is not what we were made for. We are conquerors. We are builders.
We are the last line against the darkness. Darkness, Archimus. Not defeat, but the swallowing of all that was and might be. We cannot fail.
And the necessities we face
are vile, are terrible.
Dawn put the calipers down, and for a second Archimus thought he saw a flicker of weariness in his Primarch's eyes.
Ah, inevitable.
Lord, is that not what the Alpha Legion might say? That victory matters more than how that victory is won. So much of this war happens in the dark. We hear its echoes or see its fires on the horizon, but never know what might have been won or lost already. All unknown, all weights on the balance of disaster or survival. But that victory, if won, will be won here and rest in our hands. The Imperium will stand, but only if the choices we make are pure.
Dawn looked at Archimus, dark eyes boring into him, his face utterly still. He remembered the Alpha Legionnaire's dead eyes looking up at him.
We know you. We know you all.
Archimus shook his head.
Why are we doing this? Of all the threats that might come against us, this is not one that demands such attention, let alone such secrecy. And the more I think of it, the more I consider what has happened, the less sense it makes. A unit of Alpha Legion, 10 units, 100. What could they truly do? And for what threat they do pose, the hunter cadres of Malkador's Chosen are more skilled in hunting such foes.
Because I trust you, said Dorne. And understanding is not required.
Arcamus blinked and bowed his head.
By your will,
he said, and half turned to leave, but then stopped, and the old question asked of him decades before rose to his lips.
What are you afraid of, my lord?
Dorne was silent for a second, and Arcamus felt as though he could feel the tremor of vast thoughts turning behind the face of his Primarch. Arcamus held himself still, eyes steady, even as the instinct to kneel and ask forgiveness pulled at his old flesh.
What will it cost? Said Dorne at last. We will have victory, because I will not allow us to fail. But what will that victory cost? Because at the last, whatever that cost, it must be paid.
And what of the future we were to build, Lord? Will it be built in the ashes of our honour?
Dorne was silent, and for a moment Arcamus thought he saw other faces in the shadow lines of his lord's face. Mortarion, Korax, Kurz.
That, said Dorne at last, that is what I am afraid of.
Arcamus bowed his head, unable to hold his Primarch's gaze any longer.
I will follow your will and this duty to the end, he said, and brought his hand to his chest in salute. I will not fail you.
No, you will not, said Dorne.
Armina Fell watched Arcamus leave. The glow of his thoughts was like fire embers, brightness and heat crackling under cold layers of ash. She stepped back into Dorne's chamber. The Primarch's mind was briefly a flame that shrank to darkness, hidden by force of will.
What are your orders, Lord?
It is time. Once Arcamus's ship is loose, the phalanx will move to the rendezvous with the fleet off Neptune. You are prepared?
Everything has been arranged between the other principal astropaths and me.
Dorne nodded once in acknowledgement, and Armina knew that the gesture was both acknowledgement and dismissal. She did not move.
Master Arcamus, you did not tell him, Lord.
Dorne's mind flickered, but remained closed and dark.
No, he said. He has his duty. I have mine.
Should he not
make what preparations you need to, mistress? We leave within the hour.
Of course, Lord,
she said, and bowed her head. Kestros was watching the monitor when the door opened. He did not look up. It was Andromeda. He could tell from the rhythm of her steps on the stone floor, light and smooth, like the movement of a feline predator. She stopped just beyond his arm's reach and looked at him for a second.
I thought you were having your chest split open and sewn back together, she said.
He said nothing. They had closed him up an hour before. The right-hand side of his chest was a layer of grafted flesh over a frame of plasteel and ceramite bolted to his bones. The pain was a storm still crackling through him, and he could taste blood with every breath. When he neither moved nor answered, she turned to look at the monitors. There were 9 screens, each hung with cables and showing a different angle of the same image. The slumped form of Dowager Son Hyrakro. Chains led from loops on the wall to manacles locked around his wrists and ankles. He wore a plain shift of off-white, stained by sweat.